This is part two of a two-part podcast. If you'd like part one, you'll find it at personallifemedia.com.
Welcome to Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. I'm your host, Alisa Kreitman. This show is dedicated to bringing you the most insightful and useful information available today to help you manifest all your love, intimacy, romance, and relationship dreams. Today on the show, I'm happy to welcome back Charlotte Castle, PhD, author of the highly acclaimed book, If the Buddha Marries, Creating Enduring Relationships on a Spiritual Path. You want that attraction to be strong. In all these couples that last, they just liked each other and they adored each other, and there was an emotional attraction almost from the outset. Now, some people, it happened, they were friends a long time, and then there was this cosmic look one day and they were lovers, you know, in their heart. Post-traumatic stress really makes that difficult because a person is managing so much angst and anger and rage and fear and hurt and pain. And when they get triggered, which happens easily because you've got so many triggers from your childhood experience, that the person just is, all they can do barely is cope with themselves and think about themselves and put a protective wall around them, and the us is just gone at that point. In our last interview, we discussed her book, If the Buddha Dated, and I'm very excited to talk today with Charlotte about the Buddha and marriage. We learned so much about spirituality and some of the basic ideas of Buddhism as related to the dating scenario, and now we're going to get a little bit deeper into some of those concepts and marriage. So, welcome to the show, Charlotte. Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
So in today's show, we're going to delve into such topics as the proven traits of an enduring relationship, conscious versus unconscious sex, the roots of affairs, how to avoid one, how to heal from one, and how to make a good relationship great. So, for those of you just getting to know Charlotte Castle, she is a licensed professional clinical counselor, certified addiction specialist, Reiki master healer, consultant, and teacher. She's the author of many books, including If the Buddha Dated, If the Buddha Got Stuck, Finding Joy, Many Roads, One Journey, Moving Beyond the 12 Steps, and the classic book, Women, Sex, and Addiction, A Search for Love and Power. She also designed a 16-step program. Well, it's an empowerment program, and it's really transforming lives across the globe. So, Charlotte, again, I'm so excited to talk to you about If the Buddha Married.
Yes.
So, you know, one thing I wanted to start off with is your work is such a unique blend of Buddhism, Sufism, and being a Quaker with a background in psychology. So tell us a little bit about that. How did you get to all of those paths, and what's at the heart of those disciplines that has them work so well together?
Okay, well, the core of them is that you learn to listen inside yourself to your own deepest truths, and it's becoming aware of your own experience, your body, your sensations. What's this experience teaching me? What am I really feeling? What's true here? And that's very different from, well, they told me this, and here's the rules, and here's what I should do. It's like, what feels right deep down inside? So you create an internal resonance with yourself. It's not taking on rote teachings and blindly believing anything. You know, there's that wonderful book, If You Meet the Buddha on the Road, Kill Him, you know, from Sheldon Kopp years and years ago. And it's like, don't take on an external guy side, listen to teachers, learn from them, but keep going into yourself. And at the core of this is listening, understanding, stepping aside of the ego to find out who you really are. And you do the same then in a relationship. Really listen. You know, instead of sort of have your arguments being formed while they're talking, and try to understand. It's like, how can I get into being in their shoes? What's going on with them? Can I empathize, feel? Because empathy and the ability to feel for another in a healthy way is really core to close and these enduring, wonderful relationships. And, you know, the title says enduring. I would also say vital, alive, joyful, fun relationships. And I interviewed a lot of couples who, you know, 40 years later, they're still making love. They grin at each other. They're obviously adore each other and very close.
Well, that is a great segue into my next question, which is, what are the traits of an enduring relationship, and how do we cultivate them?
Well, you know, you can cultivate some, but I would go back to saying it's really important how you pick out a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything that's been written, that's been researched, is that there should be a wonderful feeling in the beginning. There's a flow, there's an ease, there's a joy, there's a connection. And if people get with someone because they're encouraged, because like, well, you know, you can't be so fussy, or well, they're a good bet, or, you know, they've got a good degree, or they'll give me status, or, well, it's pretty good, I don't know, feel too excited. That's not where you want to start an enduring relationship. So it's really paying attention to all those signs at the outset. So now go to, if you're in one, those traits. One is that ability to hold the other person in your heart. You know, that you think of them, even if you're upset or hurting, there's a barrier to ever wanting to hurt them. And you create this us place. That's much more than the two individuals. And, you know, it's referred to in the Christian ceremony, you know, you cleave to each other as one. Mm-hmm. And the one part is that your energies really merge together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that alchemy that's, you know, your bond, your little looks of the eyes, your little smiles that you can read and you understand and you know them, and the jokes you've built up over the years. Those kinds of things. And, you know, unlike the idea opposites attract, generally people who share a lot of interests do better. Not always. I mean, people have managed. I've seen it. But generally, the people who have something that they can share values, they can share doing things together. The core values are the deepest. You can have, things you like to do that are different, that can be managed pretty well.
And so are you saying that it's important for us to sit down before we really maybe commit to being engaged and getting married, that we talk about these core values and there's enough of an authentic love and desire for this person?
Absolutely. You want that attraction to be strong in all these couples that last. They just liked each other, and they adored each other, and there was an emotional attraction almost from the outset. Now, some people, it happened, they were friends a long time, and then there was this cosmic look one day, and they were lovers, you know, in their hearts. But then you want it's mind and intuition and hormones, because you want to know, well, you know, if one wants to live in the country and raise goats and you like New York City, well, you better talk about it, because somebody's going to have to give up one part of that for the other if you're going to live together. So, yeah, values are extremely important. If you think you're going to have children, you know, what's that about? Do you want children, not children? What kind of faith do you bring them up in, or any faith? So, yeah, the values are very, very deep things.
I have a question. If, say, a woman and a man get into a relationship, but they're pretty unconscious. And maybe she's getting into it for security. Maybe he makes a lot of money. He's a very powerful man. And in her mind, she's thinking, okay, great. Well, he'll be able to care for me, take care of the kids. They'll go to good schools, et cetera, et cetera. But then they get into it for a little while, and that dynamic starts to rear its head, and problems start happening. What do you suggest for people who wake up in the middle of their marriage and realize, wow, we didn't talk about core values. We didn't talk about important things that we should have talked about then. How do people get to agreements and places of love in the face of waking up kind of 4 or 5 years into it?
Okay. Well, this is where you do what you should have done earlier, is you sit down and you really pour your heart out to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you listen. It's like it starts with, you know, we have a lot of distance. We're bored together. Our sex life is going down the drain, or, you know, it's perfunctory, or, you know, we're arguing more, or just keeping away from each other. Can we talk about it? What's going on here? And see if you can get down to the feelings, because analyzing it is, it doesn't do it. All emotion is where we make change. Emotion is where we connect. So if someone gets to saying, you know, I feel so lonely here, you know, we haven't sat down together and been together and felt that love. Now, the way to kill that from the other part is to say, oh, I feel fine. You know, and there you see the pattern in the relationship. And the us place is, if one person's hurting, the relationship is hurting.
Mm-hmm.
So you never discount if one's hurting. It's, oh, honey, let me listen. Let's sit down. And let me reach deep and find out, you know, you're right, we have been distant. And if you can get down those deeper layers, because often it sounds like this, and before you go to the deeper layers, it's, you know, you're always going away and you're never showing me you care. I don't think you care anymore at all, and you shut down. And the other one says, well, yeah, but you're such a nag, and, you know, of course I go away and I'm busy. You know, my life is busy. Don't you respect that? And I earn you lots of money. Okay, that's the superficial level.
Mm-hmm.
Drop down. You know, that lonely part I just talked about. And then if the other one often comes up with something like, you know, I do keep distance, and sometimes I just don't know what to do for you. I don't know how to please you. Sometimes I just feel like a jerk, and I really need help with what to do. Then your heart starts to open.
Mm.
So you open the mind, and you open the heart, and you open the listening, and then you get two people who are starting to come together again.
Mm-hmm.
Because we connect through that emotion of vulnerability and saying, here's how I'm feeling. Here's what's going on with me. You know, I want to reach out and touch you in the night, but, you know, you pull away. And can you talk about that?
What do you recommend for people who just can't seem to get past the anger? They can't get to that vulnerable place where they can say, wow, I feel stupid. I haven't been able to communicate with you. I've been avoiding you. And the other person is just too angry to even hear.
Well, sometimes it's good to go to a counselor. And I recommend, by the way, for people who want couple counseling, to go online to Emotionally Focused Couple Therapy, EFT. For couple therapy, there's the EFT, that's the emotional freedom technique, but this is a form of counseling couples that is just so in alignment with everything I believe, because it's based on understanding, listening, revealing emotions, and it's an attachment model. It's not go off and do homework so much as how do we connect? Where are those connection points? How can we get that thing where we feel together?
Well, what's the name of it again? Emotional what?
Emotionally Focused Couple Therapy.
Focused Couple Therapy.
Okay, and it's great. Under EFT, and it comes out of Ottawa. Susan Johnson has written a couple good books on that.
Susan Johnson. Okay,
yeah.
Great. You mentioned earlier something about the us place, getting into the us place.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. How can we create more of that us place, or creating the experience of us?
Well, what we were just talking about is a lot of it. It's like, let's get together and reveal ourselves. it's a protective feeling around the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a bond. It's an attachment. It's a connection. And it's hard to just make it happen, but you certainly can spend more time together, more talking together, and sharing your values and what's happening inside. And then it's also thinking of the other person, you know, leaving notes, showing up with a little something they might enjoy, the, you know, the flowers. Because you saw the flowers and that color just makes you think of your partner. Doing little things for each other, it's like never letting the vitality of that kind of thing you do when you're courting or in love go away.
Yeah.
There's just sweet things you do for each other. Now, it's got to be real. You know, you can't just be phony about this stuff. But sometimes when you start to do it, it can kind of wake up some feelings inside. And then, again, you know, as a therapist for 30 years, when I hear someone's story and I hear what they've been through, you know, you just love them. You just care so deeply because you understand what they're coping with. So if people reveal what they're coping with and talk about it, then you come together. And one of the big problems in relationships is we get to a pursuer and a distancer, and that's kind of what I described earlier. So it's to not go away when you're hurting.
Mm.
Reach out. Can you cry on your partner's shoulder? Can you take their hand? And men tend to want to go off more alone, and maybe a little of that. But in the healthy, happy relationships, they both come together with their vulnerability. He can come home and say, I feel like a jerk, and God, I just blew it, and I feel lousy. And not come home and say, I want sex.
Come home
and reveal what's going on. And I would say, you know, I want to include also same-sex couples in this conversation because while we can't say married legally except in a couple of places, I'm talking about marriage in the spirit. There are people without that certificate who are very deeply married and people who have it who aren't really married because they're not bonding in that deep, deep way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure the dynamics are a little bit different, but I wonder, now that you bring that up, you know, in same-sex couples, but the roles, I think what you're saying is the roles still happen, and someone polarizes one way, pursuer, distancer, you know, and so, yeah, I don't think it necessarily matters when we're talking about spiritual relationships or even relationships in general. That, yeah, there is a place where we have to realize there's dynamics going on and we're being polarized certain ways and that we can still come back and use a lot of these tools and techniques regardless of the, you know, form of the relationship.
But we'll enter into the conversation a lot more with gay and lesbian couples is the extent to which people are open about their identity and the safe places they have and the friendships and the community aspects of where they feel safe as a couple. Because couples are embedded in community, and we need to support a couple, other people. And one of the things for healthy couples is both partners have good friends they can sometimes talk to, process things with, and they have a life that belongs to them. So they have this safe shelter, which is home, and they can come there, and they may have real differences sometimes and disagreements, but it's not to one-up or win so much, is to connect and get it worked out. But this thing of being open, for instance, if two people are, you know, have fancy jobs where they're not out and they're often drinking a lot and isolating from other people, and nobody knows really that they're a lesbian couple, although actually probably a lot of people know, but they don't talk about it, that creates a kind of deadly isolation.
Sure.
And alcoholism is very high, and it's much higher when people are in the closet, and it's just kind of almost legendary that kind of coming out of the closet, being more open, and sobering up often go together with gays and lesbians.
Yeah, I can totally get that. Also, you know, it just lends itself to people, straight, gay, whatever, you're talking about the extent that they're open. A lot of people have had trauma, wounding from their childhood, sexual abuse, things of that nature that they aren't willing to admit either, which has a huge impact on the relationship. So I really like that concept of what is the extent that you're open and willing to admit who you are as an individual.
Absolutely. And that concept of us, post-traumatic stress really makes that difficult because a person is managing so much angst and anger and rage and fear and hurt and pain. And when they get triggered, which happens easily because you've got so many triggers from your childhood experience, that the person just is, all they can do barely is cope with themselves and think about themselves and put a protective wall around them, and the us is just gone at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And when they you know, they'll have a blowout or a tantrum or, you know, just want to hide or scream or get away or something, at that point, they're back in a very, very young and terrified place. And they're not in tune with the other person at all. Because sometimes they'll come back later and say, you know, what did you say anyhow? Or one person said, yeah, it never crossed my mind the impact of my behavior on you.
Mm.
And that's the perpetrator inside them.
Mm.
And, you know, all of us who've had trauma need to know, you know, we've got that perpetrator partly in us. And we need to face that and make friends with that part and change it. It certainly can be processed and changed a lot. I've done 30 years of therapy with trauma survivors, and people go through bad relationships, troubled ones, and I've seen them over and over get into good relationships because they can create in us, because they've processed so much of the material that they don't trigger out so much. You know, on a 0 to 10, they don't keep going up to a 9 and 10 all the time. You know, at a 3 and 4, you can still think about the other person. But when you're just, you know, it's like if the car is rolling off the highway and crashing into a ravine, you're just thinking about yourself, right? But for someone who's had trauma, it feels like that a lot of the time. You get a little angry at them, and they feel like you're leaving them, and they're falling into the abyss, and you just were a little upset over something.
Yeah, good news. Good news to know that there is so many kinds of ways that we can get help for ourselves if we find these things rising up in our relationship. We are going to take a short break to support our sponsors. This is Alisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. I'm with Charlotte Castle, PhD, acclaimed author of If the Buddha Married, and we'll be right back.
Listen to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, a weekly internet audio program from PersonalLifeMedia.com. Learn ancient secrets that turn on the soul of sex at PersonalLifeMedia.com.
We're back. I'm Alisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. We're speaking with Charlotte Castle, PhD, author of If the Buddha Married. Before the break, we were talking about what are some of the ways that we can create more us consciousness, things like pulling together versus isolating, opening up and talking about ourselves, being vulnerable. And so now I want to talk about sex. One of the things I want to talk about is revisiting something you said, Charlotte, in our interview with If the Buddha Dated. We were talking about monogamy versus polyamory, and you said that people generally who are geared toward polyamorous relationships, there's a fear of them going really deep with one person and revealing themselves on a deeply vulnerable level. Can we talk more about that? Because I think it's really important to talk about this, because I think it's the roots of why people have affairs.
Yes, because you're talking about not going deep into the oneness, into the us, into that deep sense of intimacy. And when we don't go in there, then we want new stimulation and new novelty. Instead of with our partner where we can't seem to get deep, then we're longing for something else. And, you know, the sexual act is it's not a big deal in one way if it's just about the sex.
Mm.
You know, people, and I was around in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, it's an act. It's something. But to commune with someone through the physical body, through exploring, through being totally physically present is an incredible experience. And many people aren't there. You know, there's a lot of perfunctory sex. I remember talking recently with a couple, you know, who are 25 years and having a wonderful sexual relationship marriage. Is they say they have this agreement, never perfunctory sex. They have to feel connected, and they have to feel close, and they take time and make sure both people are really stimulated. So the sex becomes an expression of the bond and the depth, and it also deepens the connection. It's circular in that way.
Yeah, because I can see if the sex is off, that just is like the playing ground for all kinds of things to happen in the relationship. And one of the big things you talk about in your book is about people having affairs, the actual trauma it is of having affairs. And I'm not sure people are necessarily connected in with the impact that an affair has on a bond. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, if they've promised to be monogamous and there's an affair, it means, okay, we've stirred up this relationship. What's wrong in the relationship? How long was this in coming? You know, how many years has this been going on? Who looked the other way? What's missing? What needs to get talked about? Let's open up everything and put it on the table. And generally, if I'm working with a couple, the affair needs to stop before we can really deal with the relationship. Because if they're still doing it, it's kind of like still drinking or using drugs. It's
right.
Always escaping, and you're not really dealing with it. And both people really need to get in there. It's often portrayed as the bad one who went off and had the affair and the good one who was the wounded one at home. But it's about the relationship, so they both have a part in it to some degree.
Yeah.
You know? So, again, that talking needs to open up, and no phony forgiveness. I mean, a lot of people just right away, oh, it's fine, I forgive you. And they say that out of terror that the person will leave.
Right.
And it usually just makes the other one feel more wretchedly guilty, you know.
Right.
It's like if you can say, I didn't like it, and I'm angry at you for that. What women say almost across the board when women have had affairs is, I felt like I was dying in the relationship. And someone helped me wake up and feel alive and happy, and I felt wanted and cared about. Those are all the things you want in a relationship, right? Alive,
right.
Wanted, cared about, brightened up. You know, someone's talking to them with respect, with kindness, with that twinkle in their eye. And when you feel like you're dying, you're getting into fight, flight, freeze, and you're going to do something to not die.
Yeah, I think the important thing here is to allow the affair to be a vehicle for healing.
Well, healing, it's certainly, I would say, getting open, getting honest, yeah. And the other thing, there has to be a point in time where you don't drag it out and throw it at the other person. Because, you know, 5 years later, they're getting in a rough place, and one brings up, well, you had an affair or something, well, or makes snide remarks about it. So there has to be a time, you know, what will you need to have this forgiven? Now, what will need to happen is that person can voice what it was, that they understand why they had that affair. And especially with men, women can get there usually easier. But with men, it's hard for them to voice it, and they need to get there and say, yeah, I get. I was using this to feed my ego or to feel good or to... Because it was there. It's just, I think, you know, my father did, and when I go on a trip and I'm not near you, what harm does it do? They understand what harm it does inside them as well as to the partner.
Oh, that's because a good piece.
Yeah, we're breaking a vow we made. And if we take that vow seriously, you know, I wrote in the beginning, I think it's of the Buddha David, but the basic vow of relationships is more than anything else, I want myself, I want my integrity and my goodness and my honesty, and I commit to that within me so I can give it to the relationship. Because we're totally out of integrity when we lie to a partner.
Right.
And the partner feels it. they may not quite get it, but they may start eating or feeling nervous or anxious or depressed because they know something's wrong. And, you know, they'll say often if the man's having an affair, the woman is picking up all the signals. And there was a study on this. When the man lies about it, the woman just goes nuts because she's picking up the signals. She can feel it. And she actually gets relief when he just cops to it and says yes, because it validates her reality and her gut experience.
Yeah, it's so funny to see my fiancé's face when I nail him on something. He's like, wow, that's exactly what's going on. And it's amazing that women can do that. And, you know, I love it when men can just drop instead of, you know, adding that resistance. Like, no, that's not the way that it is. And then
right.
It's just there's so much freedom there. So say there was a rift in the relationship. You talk about the art of apology, but you add a deeper cut on just some sort of rote apology, like you said. Can you talk to us as we wrap up here? I could talk to you for days, but let's end on the art of apology.
A real apology comes from the heart. It's not that I was caught, so, oh, I'm sorry. That isn't an apology. An apology comes when you really experience the harm you've done to the other person. Unless you feel it, unless you see the wound in that person's face and in that life that you participated in creating, you're not really apologizing. You have to feel it inside yourself to say, whew, I do feel bad. Not just guilty, but feeling like I hear you and I get what I participated in hurting in you. So then you can say you're sorry, but... big but. You have to then agree inside yourself to do what it takes not to do it again. Because I'm sorry gets really old in a hurry. It's a very tired phrase.
Yeah. How do we not do it again? I mean, I know I've had friends even where they would apologize, and it would be this very almost like... calculated, I'm really sorry that I hurt your feelings, that I was unskillful in my words, but there was no feeling there.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do? Two questions. If the person's giving us an apology, but it's not landing for us.
You say just that. You know, I hear the words, but my gut doesn't feel secure that it's not going to happen again and soon. You know?
Yeah.
And you have to enter into a deeper discussion about, okay, when those impulses come up to, like, let's say flirt with someone else at a party,
mm-hmm.
okay, which is hurtful to your partner. If you have a bond, you withdraw that sexual energy running on other people. So you can't just say, I'm sorry, and go do it again. You say, I'm sorry, and you look at, what is this about inside of me? You know, what insecurity is it? Or sense of power or hot stuff, or it makes me feel important or whatever it's about. You have to look at that and say, what is this about that I do that? And that I would wound my relationship over this need to do this. And then you could say to the partner, let's talk about when we go to a party together, about staying together or looking at each other or something. Let's become a team. I talk a lot in A Home for the Heart about making allies to our wounded places.
Mm.
And that's how we can actually heal in a relationship. So it's like, okay, it's considered in the EFT language kind of one of the dragons of the relationship is one wants to flirt at a gathering. So we externalize it. Okay, that's one of my dragons that I have this deep desire to flirt when we're out. Okay, how can we as a team slay the dragon?
Mm.
So you're not breathing fire on each other so much as you name the places. And one might be I withdraw. One might be I get nervous and talk my head off. So how do we work together? Like maybe a little tap on the arm. It's like, honey, I really am listening to you. And that might be the key that says you don't need to repeat it anymore. Because like people who never got listened to tend to repeat themselves. So, and it's not a bad thing. It's just how it is. So then instead of saying, God, you always repeat yourself. You talk so much, saying, how can I be helpful to you? Or how can we slay this dragon together that you, when you get nervous, you talk a lot? And then the one will say, yeah, okay, just tap me on the arm and smile at me, something. So you work together on these things, and that creates the bond again.
Yeah, I love it. The first step is being vulnerable enough to admit, yeah, I flirt. Yeah, I talk a lot. Yeah, my voice gets really loud when I get excited. And how can we work on that together versus making each other wrong and getting into an argument? Yeah.
Right. And if we say it to each other like, boy, you sure talk a lot. I mean, people just reel into their shame and feel bad because they know it. It's like, honey, you know, I want to say this gently, but, you know, it feels like sometimes you kind of break in and interrupt a lot, and I don't know if you're aware of that. And the person said, yeah, I kind of am, and I do it when I'm anxious. So there you're already connecting. So the other person says, oh, I didn't notice. I didn't think I did. Or I think I'm really better. That's when people hit their shame. They say, oh, I'm better than I used to be. Yeah, and it's like, well, is there anything, you know, about that? Because when I'm talking and you break in and interrupt, I feel like I have to repeat what I'm saying. I don't feel connected. I want to go away. I get irritated. So is there some way we can deal with this? Maybe if you hold hands if I'm talking, or say, okay, this is talking time. Let's have a talking stick. Whatever. Because what's very interesting, and I'll tie this back to sex to close this, one couple who took a kind of listening thing where if you have a conflict, you have the talking stick, and one says what they are feeling and they're going through. The other says what they're feeling and going through, not arguing, but just relating their experience. And so when they have a conflict about maybe one's working too much or, you know, the one's feeling lonely, and they go through this really listening, their sexual life gets much better.
Mm.
This one couple said, you know, we've been married 20 years, and we've never had lovemaking like this. We make love for hours. Because there's just nothing in the way.
Nice.
And that's the point. You know, the question I mentioned earlier, are we creating separateness or closeness? And when you get all that junk out of the way, there's nothing but love in there. It's like you can relax into each other's arms and bodies and kisses and hugs. And you can be present because there's not fear rolling through your body. And you touch with a consciousness. As if you're touching someone for the first time, and it's alive, it's real. It's not just kind of robot, like, oh, well, you might as well be rubbing a stick on them or something, you know. It's you're sensing in your fingers and in your hands that body, and you're really connecting the same way you connect when you really, really listen and get down in there.
Charlotte, such great, great, great information for people wanting to have their marriages, their partnerships, in whatever form, really be solid and loving and from the heart. So thank you for being with us today. Tell us again how we can find you.
You can find me on my website, which I say is going to get improved soon.
The caveat.
.com, and KASL is Castle. So it's charlottecastle.com, and all my books are listed there, and we're going to be putting more pieces of the books on there, too, as time goes on.
Yeah, really fantastic. And listeners, we're going to be also talking with Charlotte about If the Buddha Got Stuck, because your books are so fantastic, full of tools and techniques, meditations, all kinds of things that you can use in your relationship to create deeper intimacy and have more love present. And also, listeners, if you want to shoot me an email, let me know any comments that you have, ideas for topics you'd like me to cover. You can do that at Alissa, A-L-I-S-S-A, at personallifemedia.com. So feel free to send me an email. And also, there's always transcripts of this show and other shows on the Personal Life Media Network. Just go to personallifemedia.com. Charlotte, thank you so much again for being with us. Your work is incredible. I love having you on the show.
Well, it's a wonderful pleasure, and I so enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, thank you. So, signing off, I'm your host, Alissa Kreitman, always expanding your awareness and choices here on Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. Tune in next week for more juicy news you can use.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.